there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gremling. I am joined by Jenny Vrentis of the Weekside Podcast to run through the Week 11 Sunday action. And Jenny, we had overtime games, we had upsets, we had quarterbacks emerging, we had quarterbacks getting benched. It was a roller coaster of a Sunday.
Roller coaster is a good way to say it, Gary. Like a lot of those Sundays have been this season, it's been very dramatic so far.
We'll start with the Sunday night game, which, yes, it was dramatic, but at the same time, it kind of wasn't that dramatic because once Patrick Mahomes got the ball back with, you know, a generous amount of time on the clock, it was just kind of, it's completely expected at this point that the Chiefs are going to win those types of games.
Yeah, especially the way the game had been to that point. You're right, it wasn't dramatic in the sense that it just seemed like whichever team had the ball was going to score, and we were going to be in one of those situations where whoever had it last would probably win. So when the Chiefs get the ball back with a minute and a half, the only thing I was thinking was, well, if the Chiefs score too fast, maybe the Raiders will get it back. I mean, honestly, it just seemed expected that Mahomes would lead them to a go-ahead touchdown.
It's just like when the Raiders had their last series here on the goal to go, I was sitting there watching it, and I was thinking, like, man, if they can, like, draw a third down pass interference penalty in the end zone, and then they can, like, run two plays and run, like, another minute off the clock, and then, you know, maybe you milk the clock that way. It just seemed inevitable. By the time they scored their touchdown, it was like, ah, yeah, you just lost the game. You're only winning by 3 now. It's over.
Yeah, but even with that, even with the expectation that Mahomes would go down and score, you could really appreciate the design of that winning touchdown, the fact that Kelce came open, the fact that there was really no way for the Raiders to win on that play. And, you know, there's 4 vertical pass routes and, you know, there's the threat of Mahomes running. If you're the Raiders, I don't know how exactly you're supposed to defend against that.
I know. And one of my, I don't want to necessarily call it a favorite thing because it's kind of a bummer for the Raiders. But if you watch either the replay or even like the next gen dots and see what happened to the pass rush, the Raiders four man pass rush on that play, and this was an issue most of the night, but I've never seen it to this extent. All four pass rushers basically got corralled by the Chiefs offensive line into like this little cluster where they were all just like on top of each other. And Patrick Mahomes had like the entire field to work with. So it's like, you know, Jonathan Abram, yes, that was technically his coverage bust in the end. He's the one who sort of abandoned Kelsey there to come up on Mahomes. But if Abram stayed back on Kelsey, Mahomes is running for, I mean, he just has a free 15 yards in front of him. So, I'm not really sure what you're supposed to do. I guess stay on Kelsey and then live to fight another down. But there's not really a right answer at that point once your pass rush has been neutralized to such an absurd degree.
That was absurd, that this little cluster of linemen, essentially. You know, as you mentioned, that was a big issue for the Raiders all night. You know, they were down Cleveland Farrell. So, you know, I think that really hurt them perhaps in the run game a little bit more. But overall, yeah, it was just kind of Mahomes was able to do things like that for most of the game.
Yeah, and Collinsworth did point it out in the telecast how the Chiefs were just destroying the Raiders on the edges all night, and they definitely picked up on the fact that Max Crosby shoots inside on basically every snap, and they took full advantage of that as the game went on. But we do need to take a quick minute, and you and I both love Connor Orr, and Connor Orr I think likes us. But he loves Derek Carr, and it has just really been nice this year, because I think as soon as John Gruden got there, we all sort of said, okay, well, Derek Carr, he'll find someone else, he'll move on, and Gruden did not seem to be in love with Derek Carr. You have to love what Derek Carr is doing this year, because, you know, for a guy who just was quick strike for the longest time, and last year they sort of tried to break him out of it a little bit and it didn't quite work. But this year it is. This year he's playing deep into the down. He is making plays that he just didn't even try to make in the past, and that's why they can now they can do things when they go head to head with the Chiefs, and they can be in these games. Whereas I think in past years, I mean, look, if the Chiefs' offense was going to do what they did last night, it's probably just like a 2-touchdown win for the Chiefs.
Yeah, my skepticism for Carr's long-term future with the Raiders was less his ability to play like this, although I agree this has been a big step forward, but more so the fact that Gruden just never really seemed all that committed to him.
Yeah.
You know, they had that Kyler Murray flirtation before the draft. That was kind of a strange thing with the Oakland A's hats and making a joke about that. It was like this whole show that seemed to be making some bigger point. And then, you know, Carr buys the house in Vegas and you think like, is that a good decision to buy property in Vegas because your coach doesn't seem that committed to you? But whatever Gruden's feelings have been, we have seen the progression that people hoped Carr could have under Gruden, and that they could develop into this partnership like we're seeing now. And that makes them a dangerous team. I mean, they beat the Chiefs once, they nearly beat them again. So they showed that there are a really talented team beyond perhaps what some of the expectations may have been.
The Chiefs have now won 18 of 19. The only team to beat them in the last calendar year here is the Raiders. And they're also now 30-4 against the AFC West since 2015. So, it's the NFL and there are no moral victories. And certainly the Raiders have postseason plans, but it's kind of like, you know what? This is a really nice performance by the Raiders. And kind of a bummer that they leave with a loss, but yeah, it's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Saints Falcons. Let's go on to, I mean, this was the quarterback story of the week. It was the quarterback story of the day. This was Taysom Hill and this debut start. And we all had our fun with Taysom Hill and the expectation that he was, I don't know, being depicted as like a surefire Hall of Famer, the next franchise quarterback of the Saints all offseason. And we saw it. And it worked. It worked as well as it possibly could have worked. And we can get into some of the things, some of the reasons why it worked. But I mean, this was, look, Sean Payton was right. Sean Payton was right to go with Taysom Hill as the starter in this game.
Yeah, and we talked about it on this podcast last week, Gary, that we both hoped that he would go that direction, that we wanted to see what would happen with Hill in there, and that there had been so much talking him up in the off season, and then they applied the first round tender to him, and so there was this expectation that he could be the successor. So they finally backed that up. They said, okay, our Breeze is out. We're putting Hill in there. And I think designed a really smart game plan and, you know, worked to do things that showcased Hill beyond the running ability, right? They built a game plan that was more than just built on his running ability. But it was one game, and I think history has taught us that we shouldn't get too far ahead of ourselves. I don't know why this came to mind, but I was thinking a little bit yesterday about the Brock Osweiler Peyton Manning situation. And you know, Osweiler fills in, Manning's out for an injury with an injury, Manning comes back, wins the Super Bowl, and then you think the Broncos are on their way, and it just didn't, you know, Osweiler's career, of course, didn't work out for multiple reasons, but I just, that promise that you saw didn't end up panning out.
Yes. And I don't want to, I feel like the meanest thing we can do today is be like, yeah, remember Brock Osweiler.
Sorry, that was a bad comparison. And obviously he went to Houston and it's not the same thing. I don't know. And, you know, Hill is paired with Sean Payton. But so, like I said, for whatever reason, it just came to mind because you've got this like Hall of Famer that's kind of at the end of his career and is physically diminished. I think that's why, Gary, it.
Yes. Yep, and I want to build off that, and then I will go into the optimistic part of this. I mean, look, this game flow, it fully played into the Saints' favor. The play action game stayed alive, and you know, I think everyone knows at this point that you don't necessarily have to quote unquote establish the run to have your play action be effective, but you do have to have a lead, not getting to third and long. Play action doesn't work on third and 10. Play action doesn't work if you're down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So the fact that that remained a factor, I think I saw Pro Football Focus had it as 11 play action dropbacks for Taysom Hill in this game. And, you know, it ended up being 23 pass attempts on the game. So probably 45% or so of his dropbacks were play action. And play action is, it's a very quarterback friendly concept. I mean, it helps to be able to use that and it helps to have that available. The optimistic thing I'll say about this, and you've seen across the league, whether it's, you know, whether it's Josh Allen or it's Lamar Jackson or it's whoever you like, among these sort of athletic, we'll for shorthand, we'll say dual threat type guys, but it is not only the sort of dual threatness of it is effectively melding that, you know, expansive multi-dimensional run game with the passing game. It gives defenses so much they have to be concerned with. They are so it puts a stress on defense in multi facets. And what you saw in this game was it just creates these wide open throwing windows. There were not a lot of tight window throws that Taysom Hill had to make in this game, and he made the throws. He had one bad miss on a rollout. He had that one I didn't even know what you'd call it, that ball he threw for Emmanuel Sanders that he sort of hung up about 15 yards short, and yeah. Sanders came back and made the play. And I think you would chalk that up to bad throw, but other than that, he made the throws, and the throws were very much available for him. And if that's the way it's going to go, like, absolutely. Taysom Hill, because he is his threat with his legs, and because he's also a downfield thrower, which Drew Brees is not at this point, it creates space that wasn't there when Drew Brees was at quarterback there. And it's good that I think that space will continue to be there as we go forward.
Yeah, and it's a good stretch for Hill to be playing. It's a softer part of the schedule, and it gives Breeze time to get healthy, and it gives them a window into the potential future with Hill.
Yep, and look, like you said, soft stretch, Atlanta on Sunday, then they're at Denver, at Atlanta, and Philly coming up. So, although we'll get into Denver a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, maybe not as soft as we made it seem.
I will say, though, the one thing, and I think we were right to just spend 3 hours talking about Taysom Hill, but the Saints' pass rush the last 3 weeks has emerged as absolutely dominant. And I think everyone was very bullish on this defense coming into the year, and then everyone was a little bit deflated after seeing them struggle, basically against any non-Tampa Bay Bucks opponent for the first half of the season. And now the defense is dominating, and that's another reason that you're optimistic that this will work with Hill going forward, because, I mean, the complementary football, the fact that they're just not going to give up points, that they're not going to fall behind by two touchdowns. I mean, it did take a while for the Saints offense to get going in this one. They trailed for most of the first half, but, you know, it was 3-0 and it was 6-3. They were never just getting, you know, at risk of having the Falcons just pull away in this one.
Yeah, and one thing I thought was notable, too, is that Raheem Morris, the Falcons' interim head coach, pointed out that a lot of the coverage came from, or a lot of the sacks came from good coverage on the back end. Obviously, they worked together. But the Saints did that without having Lattimore in the game. So I think it was a impressive effort from the defense that bodes well for the future weeks, potentially, you know, in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, this is all kind of setting up nicely here for the Saints down the stretch and for January. Let's go out to Indianapolis where the Colts look. I think the biggest question with the Colts going forward, I do think they're the best team in the AFC South. The question was, can they play from behind against a quality opponent? We saw them come back against the Bengals. The Bengals are maybe not they're just not that good defensively. But and the Packers are not world beaters defensively. But you know, a lot of times in the NFL now, you get put away by an opposing team's offense. A team just scores and scores and scores, and you can't make a deficit. Colts were down 2 touchdowns at halftime. They didn't have to get away from what their identity was in this game, and they end up coming back. They scored 17 unanswered points in the second half, took a lead. Packers finally got points at the end of regulation to force overtime, and the Colts end up winning it anyway. But I thought this game was really encouraging for the Colts, not only because you beat a quality opponent and not only because you stay on top of the AFC South at this point, but the way they were able to do it, the way they were able to do it without, you know, having to get away from who they are.
Yeah, and I've had the same thoughts about the Colts too, Gary, and I've never really known where to rank them this season for the reason that you just described. But this really was a tremendous defensive performance against a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. Of course, Rodgers is going to get his throws, like the you know, late drive that forts in overtime. I mean, that's not on the defense. That's just Rodgers' amazing ability. But the defense this year is, you know, all of the pieces have come together and to make it the best defense in the NFL. They added DeForest Buckner. They brought Xavier Rhodes in from Minnesota, put him in a more zone-heavy scheme versus the man coverage he was asked to play in Minnesota. It's worked out. Xavier Rhodes has really taken a big step forward, or kind of revived his career a little bit, is maybe a better way to say it. So some of the pieces they've added have really worked. And so when you have a defense that can contain Rodgers in the second half to allow your offense to come back, like, that makes the Colts overcome some of the deficits you might worry they have otherwise.
And as far as the Packers are concerned at this point, look, it's been an underwhelming November. I know Matt LaFleur was none too pleased with the effort against the Jaguars last week, a game they won but did not win by very much against a not very good opponent in their own stadium. But outside of that Thursday night blowout in Santa Clara, I mean, they got upset by the Vikings at home, and now they've lost this game, sort of a come-from-ahead loss in Indianapolis. And it was turnovers was the issue for them. They turned it over 4 times. You'd have to go back to 2017 for Aaron Rodgers' offense turning it over 4 times, although I should say it was one special teams turnover involved in there. But, I don't know if you necessarily sound the alarms at this point. They're just not going to there aren't going to be very many games where the Packers give it away 4 times. But it's just been the sharpness we saw from this offense early in the year isn't quite there. And the defense is kind of not exposed, but they're just kind of leaky at the wrong times, I guess is how I'd describe it.
Yeah, I agree, Gary. I think that's the biggest thing that will determine if the Packers can make noise in the playoffs is if they can close some of those leaks on defense. I think that's been their biggest issue.
All right, Jenny, it is time for you to take a quick break because now it is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented, as always, by DraftKings. And Michael Fabiano is back. Fabs, we're going to run through the early waiver wire, but I mean, let's start with controversy. And nothing better than that. Let's talk Taysom Hill. Yes, waiver wire, but tight end Taysom Hill?
Yeah, that's going to be an issue. So FanDuel had him listed as a tight end. But DFS is a different beast because they can take him off anytime.
Yep.
ESPN has had Taysom Hill listed as the tight end all year. And I think they might take that away after Taysom Hill played quarterback this week. And to me, and I love the guys at ESPN, at least most of them. I got a lot of friends there. It's a mistake. You can't do that. You can't take away a player's eligibility in season. You simply can't do it. Think about the fantasy owners who use the number one waiver priority to get Taysom Hill as the tight end. And they wouldn't have used it otherwise because quarterback is deep. Now, he had a great game as a quarterback too, but how many people would have used the waiver claim on Taysom Hill, the quarterback, as opposed to Taysom Hill, the tight end and quarterback? I'll give you a perfect example. ESPN's ownership on Taysom Hill is over 80%. Because he's a tight end. On Yahoo, where he's just a quarterback, he's at 40%.
Yeah.
So because people don't need quarterbacks as badly as they need tight ends. I'll give you another example of why ESPN is going to make a huge mistake if they take the eligibility away. Say that, I don't know, I had Damian Harris on my roster last week, and I'm pretty good at running back, but I wouldn't have wanted to drop him. But holy cow, Taysom Hill's a tight end, and my tight end stinks. So I'm dropping Damian Harris to pick up Taysom Hill. And then you take that away from me, and I lost Damian Harris, who was picked up by somebody else, and now I can't really use Taysom Hill because I already have a good quarterback. I don't need Taysom Hill. What about folks who used a whole bunch of fab budget on Taysom Hill as a tight end? It's gone now for the stretch run. I don't know what's going to happen, but if they take it away, I can't swear, but it's bullcrap. You can't do that. You cannot, you cannot take away a player's eligibility after he's met your requirements, whatever they are, for 11 straight weeks. You just can't do it. So when we get into the waiver wire, he's gone in most leagues where he was tight end eligible and is still tight end eligible at this point. But like on Yahoo, he's 42% owned. That's it. So he had a great game. We love running quarterbacks. Broncos up next. Then he gets Atlanta again in week 13. So like Taysom Hill's a very, very nice pickup, even if he's just a quarterback in your league.
Yeah, this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say it was 2006 Yahoo with Marcus Colston as a tight end, which,
right,
similar, you know, similar contract, but not to this extent. I mean, Marcus Colston was a receiver, and he was a really good receiver, but, I mean, Taysom Hill's tight end numbers will be through the roof, and it's too late to do it now. If you are the commissioner of your league, you could have, you know, conceivably, you know, set a rule saying, okay, yes, he's tight end, and you know, according to the system, but you can't do that in this league. You can't play him at tight end in this league, but it's too late to do that now. If someone already scooped him up as a tight end, I'm with you on that, Fab. If someone's already scooped him up as a tight end, it's too late now.
Right, exactly. And so, and I feel like, you know, ESPN sometimes and others, they try to get too cute with position eligibility. Like, we get it. Taysom Hill is not a traditional quarterback. What is he listed on the New Orleans Saints depth chart? He's a freaking quarterback. He's not a tight end. Does he play some? Yeah. But guess what? He also plays snaps at wide receiver too. You're going to make him a wide receiver, tight end, and quarterback? I mean, I don't know what their requirements are. I don't know what their requirements are. But he's played a lot of snaps, you know, as a tight end. He's played a bunch of snaps as a wide receiver, and now he had a full game as a quarterback. But you can't take it away. Like, I know fantasy baseball is different, but I know for a fact that, say that, because I'm a Yankees fan, Gleyber Torres plays an entire season at second base, and the Yankees the following season decide they're going to move him to shortstop. Once he gets 10 games or 10 appearances, I should say, at shortstop, he's eligible at both. And Taysom Hill obviously met the requirements for ESPN to be a tight end, so he should be both if that's the way they want to go. Like, I'll give you another example. This one's not nearly as much of an issue. Like Cordarrelle Patterson, the Bears have him listed as a wide receiver on their depth chart. That should be the end of it. He's a wide receiver. So if you want to go out and say, well, he's played enough snaps at running back where he's eligible at running back, okay, that's fine. Don't take away his wide receiver eligibility.
Yeah.
If you want to, you want to add to it, you don't take away. So it's going to be a mess. I don't know if it's going to happen, but some of the guys there have put up some tweets that I feel like he's going to get his tight end eligibility taken away. I will tell you this. I'm in two ESPN leagues. I'm the commissioner in one, and I'm not the commissioner in the other. In the league where I'm the commissioner, I'm going to let the team that picked up Taysom Hill, Tommy Dreamer, the pro wrestler, I'm going to let him keep playing Taysom Hill at tight end, and I'm not going to play on ESPN next season because that's a disaster. And for me, in my other ESPN league, that's a league with Allison Chains, I'm going to be going to, you know, JC and the commissioner and be like, I should be able to play him at tight end. This is it's crap.
Yeah.
I dropped a guy that I might not have otherwise dropped to pick up Taysom Hill to be my tight end, and now it's being taken away from me. So the good thing is that you can go back and change the scoring. So if your commissioner holds a league vote, or your commissioner decides, hey, he could stay at tight end because it's not fair, then there's also other people who would be like, wait a minute, this is crap. It's not fair that a quarterback can be started at a tight end position. Go hit up ESPN. It's on them.
It was so easily avoidable. I mean, all you had to do was imagine this scenario where Drew Brees is out. Taysom Hill is a quarterback. No good. No good. Well, let's get to the good stuff. Let's get to the early waiver wire. And let's start with the quarterbacks. I assume Taysom Hill quarterback would be the top pickup among quarterbacks in those non-Taysom Hill tight end leagues.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So he was very good. Go get him. Derek Carr. I mean, he's a stud against Kansas City. Another huge game. And he's got Atlanta coming up this week. So he's worth and I'll tell you this, folks. There's not a lot on the waiver wire. There's not. You know, Phillip Rivers is out there. He had a good game against Green Bay, but the last time he played Tennessee, I mean, a decent game, not great. Kirk Cousins is out there, but he's got the Panthers. That's not a great matchup. You know, Tua got benched. He's going to start again for Miami. They got the Jets, so you can go there if you want. Yeah. Daniel Jones has got the Bengals this week. That's a really good matchup. Alex Smith has got the Cowboys. That's a good matchup. I mean, I look at Baker Mayfield, and he's got the Jags, and I'm like, okay, the matchup's good, but Baker sucks. He's had one good game all year long. I don't trust Baker Mayfield. They're going to run the football. So if you want to go Baker, I guess you can because the matchup's good on paper, but I don't know. Baker Mayfield scares me, man. I don't want anything to do with him in fantasy.
How about the running backs here?
J.K. Dobbins, please. We've had such an awful year. Can we have one nice thing? Can he get the featured role, please? He's such a good player. He had 40 snaps, 17 touches against Tennessee. And I'm hoping it's the passing of the torch, but they do have the Steelers on Thanksgiving. That's a bad matchup, but Dobbins needs to be added across the board. And Wayne Gallman, too, coming off a bye. He had a touchdown in four straight games before the bye. Again, Bengals, right? So pick him up. James White got dropped in a ton of leagues because he had really done nothing. But Rex Burkhead got hurt against Houston, and now White is back into that prominent role because think about it. Who is their pass-catching back? Damian Harris doesn't catch passes. Sonny Michel doesn't catch passes. And they got Arizona this week. That's going to be a shootout. Mm-hmm. So James White's going to be a pretty nice flex this week. Savon Ahmed, my favorite name to say, again, led the Dolphins backs in touches. But Miles Gaskin can come back at any time, so like keep tabs on that. The good news with Ahmed is that he was obviously their top guy, even with Matt Breida back. Yeah. And then like Carlos Hyde, and I'll say this, it's not just limited to Carlos Hyde because I think Chris Carson's coming back this week. But like handcuff those top backs, man. I mean, even if you got Brian Hill to handcuff, you know, with Todd Gurley, like do it. Tony Pollard, geez, that guy is so good. Like you've got to make sure that your top running backs and Zeke looked back to normal. It was fun actually to watch him. But Pollard he had that long touchdown run too. He's great. So just anywhere you can handcuff a stud running back, folks, you need to do it.
All right. How about the receivers here?
Michael Pittman had 66 yards and a touchdown against Green Bay. Yeah. Didn't get targeted a lot, but his numbers have been there. He's got the Titans this week. He scored, I believe, just over 19 against them a couple of weeks ago. Cole Beasley, like John Brown got hurt for the Bills. The Bills are coming off a bye. They got the Chargers this week. Beasley had a huge game. I believe it was against Arizona before the bye, and he's given you 12 or more fantasy points in six of his last nine games. Jalen Reagor has got a good matchup against Seattle. He's getting enough snaps where he's a sleeper. Alan Lazard didn't do anything against Indianapolis, but their defense is typically pretty tough. But, I mean, you'd like to have a share of Aaron Rodgers throwing you the ball, right? So Lazard's out there. Rashad Perriman, I mean, laugh if you will. Laugh it up, fuzzball. But, I mean, he's had a touchdown, at least a touchdown in two straight games. And Joe Flacco's looking for him. I don't know if Flacco's going to start next week, but Perriman is actually making some plays there for the Jets, who, I mean, they're going 0-16. They're imagine if they go 0-16 and Trevor Lawrence says, I'm staying in school.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew Luckham.
Dude, that'll be bad.
How about the tight end class here?
Yeah, Dalton Schultz. If you remember correctly, he was my guy to look out for last week, even though the Cowboys were coming off a bye. Dude, six targets again. He's had 21 targets in his last three games. Like, Andy Dalton's looking for him. And DiNucci, he looked for him. And Garrett Gilbert looked. He's a good player, man. I mean, like, we loved Blake Jarwin, but Schultz has been really good. Jordan Reed's worth an ad. He had six targets before the bye. They've got the Rams, not a great matchup. And then the Eagles tight ends, right? So, like, Dallas Goedert should be owned across the board. If he's not, you can pick him up. But Richard Rodgers has had a couple of good games here in the last 3 weeks. But if Zach Ertz is able to come back for the Seattle game on Monday night, well, then Richard Rodgers is not going to be very valuable. But Ertz has actually been dropped in a lot of leagues, so you can look into picking him up. Deeper leagues, you can look at Jordan Akins for the Texans. They've got the Lions on Turkey Day, but that's deeper league. And I told you I'm going to do it. Give me some Tyler freaking Bass, man. Buffalo Bills kicker coming off a bye. Last time he played, 18 fantasy points, 14-plus points in three of his last four games. I mean, he's been more reliable than Lamar Jackson. I am old enough to know, and so are you, a time when Lamar Jackson was actually – fun to start in fantasy. This year it stinks. It sucks. You know what? Everybody's got to keep this in mind. When Lamar Jackson was a great player last year, don't get me wrong. Justin Herbert's going to be drafted ahead of him in 2021 in fantasy, unless he turns it around. He absolutely is. A rookie freaking quarterback out of Oregon, out of all places, who hadn't produced a good quarterback since Dan Fouts in the 70s. He's giving you 20 plus every single week. Every single week. Like, there are going to be leagues where Justin Herbert, who I didn't like him as a rookie quarterback. I mean, at all. I didn't know what he was going to do in the NFL. I thought he was missing something. It was me who was missing something. He's going to get picked ahead of Lamar Jackson in drafts next year. Watch. Maybe not all of them, but it's going to happen. And if Lamar keeps sucking, it's definitely going to happen. So just keep that in mind, folks. Like, the magical season is really, 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 really hard to duplicate. And folks who drafted Lamar in the first couple of rounds are paying for it right now because you're not making the playoffs with it. Unless you picked up Justin Herbert and now you're benching Lamar, you're not going to make the playoffs with Lamar the way he's playing right now. He's been brutal, man. Like, he's had a couple of good games, but other than that, I mean, he's giving you, 15 a game. That's terrible at quarterback.
Every time the Ravens line up for a field goal, just devastating. They didn't do it last year. They didn't have to.
Nope. They were dominating competition, and that's not happening this year.
All right. Fabs, have a great Thanksgiving. We will see you next Monday. And you know what? If you want more of Michael Fabiano, si.com/fantasy, SI Fantasy Podcast. He's there all week. Fabs, a pleasure as always.
Happy Thanksgiving, my brother. I will talk to you soon.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back to Jenny Vrentis. And Jenny, we have a very important topic to talk about here, and that is Tua Tagovailoa. This was a red-hot Dolphins team. They'd won five straight. They were sort of gaining a lot of steam here as sort of the darling, dark horse competitor in the AFC, and they went out to Denver. And look, Denver's a tough place to play, and this was kind of a worst-case scenario here for them. And Tua ends up getting benched in this one. They turn to Ryan Fitzpatrick to try and spark the offense late, and it kind of worked. But I guess the first question is, what do you make of Tua at this point? And, you know, we don't need to talk about maybe his career trajectory, but this is a team with playoff aspirations. I mean, this is a team that can still win the AFC East. They're not turning back to Fitzpatrick, but is there an answer to be found here with Tua and this offense?
Yeah, and I think this kind of game was what we were probably waiting for to happen. I mean, a lot of the early starts that Tua had, the defense was really dominant, and he wasn't asked to do too much. And here he is facing a strong pass rush, and he kind of had that rookie moment where he just didn't know what to do. And I think when Flores made the decision to go to Fitzpatrick, he figured we're in a two-minute situation. There's going to be a lot of pressure. He hasn't handled the pressure well to this point. We've got to put a veteran in there to try to operate the offense. But Fitzpatrick, the interception in the end zone is sort of a reminder that the Fitzpatrick Fitz magic always runs out. And that's why they turned to Tua, I think. You know, they kind of did that before the Fitz magic had reached its the clock had struck midnight, essentially, right?
It was a very nice metaphorical interception that Ryan Fitzpatrick provided us with. And like he needed a forced throw late. It's third down and you need a touchdown,
and
that's the way it goes. But it was just kind of a reminder of like, oh yeah, you're probably not going to get the first ever sustained successful season from Ryan Fitzpatrick here. But look, I think when you step back and look at what happened in this game for the Dolphins, this is kind of, the Broncos are not world beaters, but the Broncos match up really well with this Dolphins team. And you mentioned that, you know, the pass rush, I mean, the Broncos pass rush just outright won this game against the Dolphins offensive line. But on top of that, I mean, look, Vic Fangio gives you all these blurry looks in the secondary. It's very difficult on a young quarterback. Frankly, it's, I don't know, maybe the Dolphins deserve this for what they've been doing to opposing quarterbacks all season. Maybe they get a little taste of their own medicine in this one. And it's just the way it matched up that, you know, this Dolphins defense, they've been so good with sort of the zero blitz looks. and all the creative stuff they've done that way. But frankly, they haven't stopped the run well this year. And the Broncos, what do they want to do? They want to go out and they want to win with defense in a run game. And they ended up, you know, what was it, 185 yards on the ground, about 5 yards per carry. So this sort of just played out the way that the Broncos want to win games. And just stylistically, it's a tough matchup for the Dolphins. And especially once you factor in going on the road with a young quarterback.
Yeah, you're right. It was a tough matchup. And that, you know, as I said, it was this kind of inevitable letdown that we were expecting from Tua. And everything kind of aligned to create this situation. But, you know, a good day for Buffalo because they're watching at home and they see, you know, this division race, which is suddenly interesting. And then they get a little breathing room with the Dolphins' loss.
It's always a good day in Western New York. So the Bills hang on to that one game lead, and the Dolphins are, I mean, look, it's going to be a great race. For a number of reasons, I hope they're able to play the full 256 game season. But right now, the Dolphins are sitting there. They're tied for the seventh seed with the Ravens and the Raiders. If the season ended right now, you have the Titans and Browns are the 7-3 teams that would make the postseason and wild card. So just a lot of intrigue in this race coming down the stretch in the AFC. And part of that intrigue was built by this Titans team that went to Baltimore for a second straight time, and they win in overtime in this one. A much different game than what we saw last January, where the Titans sort of got out to a lead and just sort of, you know, it just sort of grinded the Ravens down, and the Ravens eventually ran out of time in this one. But this one was the Ravens got out to a lead, and we can talk about the offense in just a little bit. But in this one, the defense kind of fell apart. It was, look, disappointing day for the Ravens defense, but also just a really dominating performance by this Titans offense in the second half of this game. They fell back 21-10 with 9:34 to go in the third quarter, and they had four drives after that. 297 yards, 8.3 yards per play, 20 points, including that Derrick Henry 29-yard run in overtime to win it. But similar with the Colts, the Titans didn't really get away from what they want to do, which is Derrick Henry and then play action off of that wide zone run game. And that's what carried them to this win.
Yeah, and there were a lot of emotions flying before the game, and it just felt like the Titans were really in the Ravens' head. I mean, by Harbaugh going out to midfield when the Titans players were evidently dancing on the logo at midfield, and then Harbaugh goes out alone to talk to Malcolm Butler. That was an interesting move because the Titans like are coming into the stadium where they knocked you out as the number one seed in last year's playoffs. And so I just felt like it felt like an emotional decision for Harbaugh to go to midfield. And I don't know if that kind of, you know, gave the Titans some kind of like emotional leverage on the Ravens.
It's an emotional move, but it backfires so badly when you blow a lead and you lose in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really nothing good can come out of it, because if you don't go out and you win the game, then it's like, oh, well, we showed them on the field. Then you can talk your smack afterwards. But if you don't go out and you lose the game, then nobody remembers that there was something at midfield where they were dancing on your logo, which, I don't know, it's just sort of a silly juvenile thing anyway. But what do I know? I don't have to get emotionally charged for these football games. So, but yeah, it was a scene.
Yeah. And, you know, watching Henry run into the end zone for the winning score and the defenders who missed him in their path was just reminiscent in that way. As you mentioned, Gary, it was definitely a very different game from last January. But the idea that this team had kind of, you know, it was just out of their grasp, you know, and there were missed opportunities. And that ending to the game, I'm sure, brought back a lot of the feelings from January as well.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, look, it was that play. There was the A.J. Brown go-ahead touchdown late in regulation,
like
here.
Physically willing themselves over the Ravens, yeah.
It's just, and that has to be so, degrading. I mean, to have four guys with a clean shot at them and none of them can make the tackle. And then, you know, your rookie linebacker, Patrick Queen, who big time talent, but maybe a little up and down this year. But I mean, that play ends with AJ Brown just steamrolling your linebacker, you know, 5 yards deep into the end zone. And I mean, that's a 3rd-and-10 play that they throw short of the sticks, and you just need to. I'm not saying anything particularly insightful, but somebody has to tackle AJ Brown there and force a 4th-down play. I mean, that's the way it goes. But yeah,
yeah. That's the kind of play that just kind of takes the will out of players, you know?
It does. And look, they go to Pittsburgh Thursday night, so short week after a physical game. Look, they have outplayed the Steelers badly the last 2 times they faced them. I'm going to throw out the Week 17 game where RG3 started. But, I mean, they should have won that game in Baltimore against the Steelers early this year. A bunch of sloppy turnovers cost it for them. Now they go there, short week, rivalry game, but how beat up are they coming off of this one? I thought the offense was, I mean, it's nowhere near where it was a year ago, but they were better. The issue was red zone again. I mean, they end up kicking a bunch of short field goals in this one and losing overtime, and I don't know. I don't know if you can really get over the fact that the offense is just not going to be what it was a year ago, but I still continue to insist, and I suppose I'll continue to insist until they finish 7-9 and miss the playoffs. But I think this ultimately ends up an 11-win team with a very, very good defense and a good offense. And I don't think they necessarily can go into, like, let's say Kansas City and win a playoff game, but they're there. I really think they're the number 2 team in the AFC when it all comes down to it. And they just, I don't know. I think it's close to clicking, but again, every time I say that, they have a performance like this.
Yeah, yeah. And now they're on the fringes. I mean, they are at risk of not making the playoffs. It's a pretty crowded AFC picture. And as you mentioned, they have a game against Pittsburgh this week. And, you know, they're going to need some kind of, like, turning point. They're going to need everything to click into place and to kind of gain some momentum, because right now they're trending the wrong way.
Yeah, and I hate schedule gazing, but I also love schedule gazing.
Yes.
After that Steelers game, home against the Cowboys, they still get the Jaguars and Giants at home. They'll play in Cincinnati against the Joe Burrow-less Bengals. And, you know, the one winning record team they have left on the schedule after this Thanksgiving game is Cleveland, and they've destroyed Cleveland in 2 straight games. So different year, different teams, but the nice thing is, all these games are primetime games. They play Thursday night Thanksgiving, Thursday night the next week, and then Monday night against Cleveland. And we'll kind of have a pretty good sense of how this is going to go for Baltimore by the time that this 3-game swing winds up here. But
yeah, you're right. That does set up pretty well for them. And if you compare them to Cleveland, I definitely agree they're better than Cleveland. So I see your point, Gary, but I do think there's been some... You know, it's just been a disheartening trend the last few weeks.
It has. It really, really has. Let's go out to Cleveland. And look, the Browns have played 3 November games. And it's like, I don't know. I don't live out in Northeast Ohio, but it seems like it's just the same weather there. Every time they're on TV, it's just windy and rainy and sort of miserable. And it's these ugly games. And the Browns have pulled out the last 2 of them now. They beat the Texans last week. And now they beat the Eagles in this one in just another sort of, I mean, it's ugly football. It's kind of what they're built for now, though. And obviously Baker Mayfield's kind of the face of this franchise. But when it comes down to it, it's been Nick Chubb, it's been the run game, and it's been the defense that's sort of carrying this team right now.
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing that you were, Gary, just watching another icky, gray, wet, sloppy day in Cleveland. And the only one of those they lost was the Raiders, who are also well-suited for that with their strong mm-hmm. run game with Jacobs. So they've built a team that well suits the conditions that they often play in. But it was still, you know, against a bad Eagles team, it was still... You know, it took them a while to close it out.
It did. It did. And by the way, the Browns get to go to Jacksonville next week. So hopefully that Florida weather is a little bit better at this point. But you said a bad Eagles team. And I've been sitting here waiting for the Eagles to turn it around, and maybe I have the same blind spot with the Eagles that I do with the Ravens at this point. But the Eagles are on a different level here because, I mean, look, they had the bye week, and it was kind of like, okay, they'll come out of this bye week, they'll smooth some things out, and things will be better. Things have been significantly worse since they came out of the bye week. I mean, back-to-back games, they have just... Carson Wentz is struggling, and we can almost set Carson Wentz aside for a second because it's not just Carson Wentz at this point. It's the entire offense is just completely disjointed. If you just watch the spacing on some of these passing plays, there's no... It's like no matter what happens, there are... two receivers ending up in the same spot at the same time. On top of that, they have protection issues now. And frankly, I mean, Carson Wentz, who's having just a nightmare season anyway, even when things do go well, he's just not making the plays that he has to play. Like the simple plays, the pick six he threw was, and I will stand by this, I think it was the worst quarterbacking play I've seen in 2020 because the play worked. They had a play action, and they had a little sort of in and out rope by Jalen Reagor who ran it perfectly. He's wide open. Carson Wentz is staring at him, and he just doesn't throw the ball. So he ends up holding on to it. He ends up trying to check it down, but it's too late. And then he gets hit while he's checking it down, and then the ball flies up, and it turns into a pick six. And it's just it is terrible football. It's just terrible, terrible football. I don't know how else to explain it at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's a great example, Gary, of how there's always just one thing wrong. So even if the play design is good, then maybe Wentz doesn't make the throw, or maybe the play design is bad, or there's a bad snap, or ball bounces off the receiver's hands, or it's just always mm-hmm. one thing. They can never get everything on the same page. And I agree with you in the sense that it has taken me a while to say the Eagles are a bad team, because I think if you look at the NFC East with Dak Prescott out, you say, okay, you've got Wentz. This should be their division. I mean, mm-hmm. you've Andy Dalton in Dallas, although the Cowboys had a good performance against the Vikings, but you've Alex Smith, who has playing with drop foot in Washington. You have Daniel Jones, who is on a better trajectory now, but continues to struggle or had early in the season continued his turnover struggles. It seems like he's gotten them under control a little bit more now, but it just seems like this should be wide open for the Eagles, and it's not.
They are 2 for 21 on third down the last 2 weeks. That I guess sticks out to me the most.
That
but
is wild.
It's and that's the thing. There's a lot to be said about Carson Wentz and their commitment to Carson Wentz. And if we're just talking strictly contractually, they are committed to Carson Wentz at least through next season. At the same time, I understand why they're reluctant to move on from Wentz for two reasons. Number one is you've seen him play at an MVP level. There's no real physical drop-off with him. And on top of that, I mean, you saw him play at a really high level late last year, less than a year ago, last December, when he was sort of carrying this really, sort of shell of a roster into the playoffs. And the other reason is, I mean, yes, Jalen Hurts is a second-round pick. You have a young quarterback behind him, and there's this line of argument that, okay, why did you take Jalen Hurts the second round if you're not willing to put him in right now? But by the same token, would you drop a young quarterback into this offense with what's going on there right now? You would. I feel like you would ruin a young quarterback if you threw him into this just complete mess of a unit right now. I think it's not feasible.
Right. That's a move you make if the quarterback is the only problem. And as we detailed before, Wentz is not the only problem. He seems to have lost confidence. He is not playing well, but nothing is going right around him as well.
Well, let's fire up the lightning-ish round right now, and let's start it with a team where things are going well. And that's the Steelers. They're 10-0 now, and I feel bad just sort of ignoring the Steelers the last 2 weeks. But it was like, you know, they smashed the Bengals, which we expected, and then they went down to Jacksonville and they smashed the Jaguars in this one. And it did take the offense a little bit to get going in this one, but the defense did more. The defense gets four interceptions of Jake Luton, and they hold the Jaguars Jaguars to 206 yards, and they scored 27 unanswered points. And it was just an overwhelming performance by a really good team against a team that is not really good.
I liked Mike Tomlin's quote after, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was along the lines of, the only thing perfect about us right now is our record. And I think that's the right mentality. You know, they haven't seemed, at times it hasn't looked like a dominant team, and Jaguars and Bengals games aren't good benchmarks of that. But they're 10-0. A lot of things are going right. They're finding different ways to win. And so that's why they're perfect right now.
And if you're the 72 Dolphins, you have Ravens Thanksgiving night circle. You probably have the games at Buffalo and Cleveland, and the Colts come to Pittsburgh. So some good tests here down the stretch for the Steelers, who, again, they have room to improve. And by the time we get to the end of December, you might be saying this team is on par with the Chiefs. I don't think we're quite there at this point, even if they do end up with the number one seed in the conference. Out in Washington, the football team gets a win here, and they are now in that 3-7 mess of a three-way tie in the NFC East. But the story in this one, Joe Burrow for the Bengals, left knee injury, major injury here. He will miss the rest of the year, and I don't know, the Bengals, I guess, have a chance to... I don't really know what they have a chance. They have a chance to finish in the bottom three and get a high draft pick and get a blindside protector in a Penei Sewell, the Oregon tackle at this point. I guess that's what they're looking forward to.
Yeah, and the way Burrow was hurt was just the thing that you fear when you have a talented young quarterback behind a porous offensive line, right? He's planted, he's throwing downfield, and you see defenders crashing into his leg. And it's no one's fault except for the fact that there's been really bad protection and he's been exposed to a lot of hits. And so the thing that we all feared would happen happened.
Yeah, and like the image of Joe Burrow's rookie year, which was, I mean, look, he was great. It was him running for his life, and so many plays he made this year was him, you know, running around and creating late in the down. And this was one of the few times where he was actually just, you know, it was a fairly traditional throw from the pocket, and this is how it ended up. So. The Cowboys look like this was their best game of 2020. They look like an absolutely competent team in Minnesota, and they upset the Vikings here. The run game got going. They ended up coming back from a deficit twice in the fourth quarter. I don't know. Is this the best team in the NFC East?
It's like that children's book, Are You My Mommy, right? Where I forget exactly, the animal tries to go to all the different animals. Mm-hmm. Are you my mommy? And you try all of these things because you just don't know who's going to win the NFC East. But I agree. I mean, the Cowboys looked good this week, Gary. So maybe it was something. I mean, they showed some potential. And I was just really surprised at the Vikings' mistakes on defense that allowed the Cowboys to win this game.
Yeah, it's what a bummer here for the Vikings. It looked like they might be able to make a run to that 7 seed in the NFC, but the defense just couldn't get off the field when they needed to at the end of this one. So, man, it's a tough way to go out. It's, you know, whatever. We all wrote off the Vikings a couple of weeks ago, and then it was kind of like, you know, it's time for optimism about them, and now it's time to write him off again, I guess. We'll go, Panthers and Lions. Talk about writing teams off. So the Panthers end up going PJ Walker, the XFL star, ends up filling in for an injured Teddy Bridgewater. And if you're the Lions and you're looking at this and it's like, you know, despite this really uneven season, they have the playoff mandate from ownership, and they're just kind of looking at it as, okay, we're still in this, and now we get this XFL quarterback against a team that's not very good. The Panthers are not a terribly talented roster, and just sort of felt like, okay, Detroit's gonna live another week. They're gonna hang around in this playoff race, and maybe if they catch a couple breaks down the stretch. But instead, they just go out and they get blown out by a PJ Walker led Panther team, and I can't really think of a worse way to just sort of die, to just have it all go down the drain in a game like this where you get shut out in Carolina, a defense that couldn't stop anyone last week.
Yeah, when Bridgewater was ruled out for the game, I noticed in the MMQB staff picks that you were the only one who had picked the Lions, and everyone else had picked the Panthers, thinking that Bridgewater would probably play. And I was like, Gary's going to get the one game up on the rest of us, because it just seemed like this is the kind of game you can't lose. And the fact that they did lose it, you just wonder, like, what else does ownership need to see? I mean, there is a convincing resume that Matt Patricia has taken this organization backwards, despite all of his public proclamations about there being so much work to do. There's a definitive case. I can't imagine what they're waiting for at this point.
Yeah. And again, look, it's been the defense all year for the Lions has been the issue. Matthew Stafford just, this was the worst game I can remember Matthew Stafford playing. He's carried this team for so many weeks, and this was his dud, and it came at like the worst possible time for them. But I'm with you. It's year three for Patricia. He's got his guys there. It's his system, and it's not working. Let's go out to Texans Patriots here. This is the former Patriots part of the show, I guess. The Texans, for a second straight year, they beat the Patriots in Houston. I mean, this game was all about Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson completely took over. And I will say, it's I always get a little bit nervous when Deshaun Watson like drops his throwing shoulder around the goal line. And I kind of wish he would stop that, because I do feel like it's going to cost him an injury at some point. But at the same time, it's just kind of cool to see him do that in a lost season, where it's like, you know, coming into this week, the Jaguars are the only team the Texans had beaten this year. It's obviously just gone as poorly as possible. And yet Deshaun Watson is just out there making plays and just sort of reminding everyone that, yeah, it is fun to win football games.
Yeah, and I think it's really nice to see him having that joy, because he's such a special talent. He's shown that repeatedly in Houston while in a really tough situation. You know, there was a general manager fired not long after he got there. And then a year and a half later, the head coach is fired in the middle of the season. And we saw the PR director fired, indicating that there's just a lot of stuff going on in Houston. And I think you just look at a player like Watson and you want him to be able to thrive, because he has these special gifts, and when you see them, it's pretty beautiful to watch. So this was a nice reminder of that. And on the flip side, it was a reminder of just how much is wrong with the Patriots.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny, we've all been focused on sort of how Cam turns every week, and you know, Cam is good, and no, okay, now Cam is bad, and what do they do about Cam? This was kind of a reminder. There was no Laremy Tunsil in this game, who was out with an illness. And you would think the Patriots would be able to get some heat on Watson. They didn't touch Watson in this game. I mean, this was a complete just non-factor with the pass rush. So it was just kind of a reminder. The Patriots, they have to address this front seven. They might have to address the second. I mean, Devin McCourty is getting up there. Stephon Gilmore, will he be here next year? And obviously on the offensive side of the ball, they still have to figure out what they're going to do with wide receiver going forward, if they do go with another quarterback. Because if you brought in, I mean, look, if Tom Brady was still there and he's playing with Damari Bird as his top receiver, this is going to be going just as poorly, possibly even worse than it is this season.
Yeah, the fact that it was this week when Cam threw his first touchdown to a New England wide receiver says all you need to know about the position.
And let's wrap it up with the Jets. They maintain their lead in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes here. But I mean, look, give them some credit. This was the second straight week they were competitive with Joe Flacco under center. This was, you know, they sort of went back and forth with the Patriots in that Monday night game 2 weeks ago. This one was more of a, you know, the Chargers got out to a lead and they had to scrape and claw their way back into it. But they did. They lose 34-28, and that's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I agree. They kept it a little bit more interesting than maybe you expected going in. And, you know, there was a point in the game when you wondered if it was shaping up for another heartbreaking Chargers loss.
Yes.
But they get the win. Herbert gets the second win of his career. And, you know, reminded that even in a Chargers season that has been frustrating at times, Herbert is really fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's they certainly have the quarterback figured out there. They have to smooth some other things out with that roster, but it was just kind of like, I don't know. I don't know what we'd be saying about the Chargers this morning had they let this one slip away, but they didn't. They closed it out when it was all said and done, and that's what counts. All right, Jenny, it was a pleasure to have you back here. You will be out with a new Weekside podcast coming out Tuesday. And all you folks out there, if you aren't already subscribed to the Weekside podcast, you don't get it on this feed anymore. It's its own feed. So go subscribe to it, rate, review, all that stuff. It's my favorite podcast.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Brentis and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for all the MMQB shows. That's a Weekside podcast with Jenny and Connor Orr, as well as the Albert Breer Show, which has Albert Breer on it. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.